You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ayo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the app today and use promo code CHGO when you sign up. Welcome in to our Sunday podcast, Sunday early Monday morning podcast, where we recap you on everything you missed out on the White Sox weekend. Some things have happened. It is minor, mostly a minor league trade that we'll discuss, and then we'll also get into our player preview segments. They were supposed to happen last week. I messed up on that. Herb put together a beautiful schedule, and I was off on the ball there. So we're going to start that this week, and we're going to start with everyone's favorite player, Andrew Vaughn. Should be fun. Alongside me, I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. Is Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow Vinny on Twitter at Vinny Duber. That's just his name. And then alongside me is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. For some reason, not being in the studio is throwing me off today, guys. You get just so used to it during the workday. We are going to jump into the White Sox making a trade, another relief pitcher trade, which most fans are very, very thrilled for. Theo Denlinger, a former late round pick for the White Sox, is going to Boston, and Boston is minor league pitcher for 2022. Franklin German is now a White Sox after they DFA'd him. What do we make of this transaction? Is it anything major? Is it a shaker? You guys interested? Not interested? What's up?
Well, of course, I go down to the South Side for lunch on Friday afternoon, and there has to be some sort of South Side related news. I was in Sean's neck of the woods down in Beverly there having a top-notch beef burger, and my whole day gets not thrown off, but there was tweeting that had to be done. And I was like tweeting, and like the waitress comes up to take my order, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm being very rude. I've got to sit here and tweet about Franklin German. But yes, of course I go down where the streets are numbered, and you know, something happens at 35th and Shield. So, but yeah, Franklin German, the minor league pitcher of the year in the Boston Red Sox organization last year. Very good numbers in the minors. He came up for a few games, very few games at the end of the season in the major leagues, and was not good. The results were horrible. But so don't look at those if you're trying to judge this move. This could be just a case of a guy starting in AAA. He split time last year between both AA and AAA. Listen, you guys are always clamoring for depth. Why don't the White Sox have depth? Why don't the White Sox have depth? And you're seeing a lot of moves here at this time of year in which they are trying to build depth. We'll see just how quality it is when and if these guys actually get on the mound or at the bat if they're a position player. But in the case of German, not really a very highly rated prospect. I think at the end of last year, or the last time MLB.com did new rankings, he was way down in the 20s in the Red Sox organization. So not some guy that is going to be topping any lists or anything like that. But found a lot of success at that both the AA and AAA level last year. Maybe the White Sox can turn that into something both at the minor and major league level should they need it this year. So again, just a depth arm. You'll see him in spring training, but not something that anybody should be freaking out about. I think the trade they made earlier this offseason, Gregory Santos, if we're just going to talk about based on what the White Sox gave up, right? I mean, they traded Cade McClure, who was kind of a name among White Sox fans in terms of somebody they'd heard of before from the prospect ranks, versus this Denlinger guy who I don't think many people had heard of before. You know, it would seem that Santos maybe would have the better case to make the team. But of course, that's usually results based. I wouldn't expect German to be a member of the opening day roster. Listen, how many times per year does any team in baseball need reinforcements in the relief corps? This guy can be counted as one of those potential reinforcements. I think you look back to last year. Remember early on in May when we were talking about, I believe this is a guy who didn't make the opening day roster. Matt Foster came up just because there was injury, because there was need in the bullpen, and spent about a month or a little more as the hottest arm in that bullpen. And then by the end of the summer, he was back at Charlotte. So, I mean, I think you're looking at guys who get cycled in and out of that bullpen. That's just kind of how relief pitching works in the major leagues these days. You need more than just seven or eight guys. And now the White Sox have another guy that they can dip into AAA with Franklin German.
And with the bullpen being so volatile from year to year, you don't know who's going to be performing this year. As Vinny just alluded to, the Matt Foster thing where he was hotter than hell early and then fell off the table. That seems like the story of his career. We got great years last year from both Jimmy Lambert and Ronaldo Lopez. Awesome. Good to see. But there's nothing wrong with getting a 25-year-old that was the Boston Red Sox minor league pitcher of the year down there in the minors. He wasn't released because of anything he did. They just acquired Rich Blyer on the team, and they needed a 40-man spot, and maybe they thought they could sneak him through. Instead, the White Sox worked out a deal with him. So 25-year-old live arm, I have no problem with it. As Vinny says, probably going to put him down in the minor leagues if we could, if he can, you know, make the team and get signed that way and get through all the waivers and such. And it's a good arm to have, good live arm, because you don't know what you're getting from the guys who are starting and the middle relievers or the people who are the long relievers. Are you going to get good effort from Jose Ruiz this year? We don't know. Maybe you struggles this year, and then you have people like this guy coming through for you, and maybe German can be the next guy that is Jimmy Cordero that's giving you 60 innings. I hope he's not 60 innings. Ricky Renteria is at the house like, yes, I want to take Jimmy Cordero's arm off. But he has a 25-year-old arm. These are what you're supposed to. This is how you're supposed to acquire your relief pitchers, by deals like this where 40-man rosters are over bloated, and you get somebody that they don't want to release, or you get them on the Rule 5 draft or something like that, not go and pay big-time money. So I know I like that people are still giving Rick Hahn all their crap about getting relievers, but this is the way you're supposed to do it, not give money to the people. So I'm going to applaud him for this move.
I think another good example of the way things work. I mean, you look back to last year when we were going into spring training, someone we probably thought was maybe on the fringes of making the team, Bennett Sousa, right? And that guy did make the opening day roster, was around for a little bit. And after a little bit, when he stopped having some success, boy, you never saw him again or didn't see much of him. That could be a very similar situation where someone starts out hot in March. You know, they have a very nice spring training. They earn a spot in that opening day bullpen. And by the end of April, that heat has cooled off, and you need another person to fill in to be able to get the job done. Who knows? Maybe Franklin German is the former, maybe Franklin German's the latter, or maybe he's neither, and he shows up sometime in August for just because someone hit the IL.
Yeah. Hey, who thought our guy Tanner Banks was going to be so important to the White Sox in 2022? He pitched, I think, 58 innings for the Sox. So that was a very surprising name, a guy that also made the team early April, started with, I think, 11 straight innings of scoreless ball or something like that. It's very impressive. But he's a funny guy, too, because I think he started off throwing very, very hard when he first started off with the Sox, and then he kind of dipped off. Or no, actually, that was the reverse. My bad. But I think you made an interesting point, Vinny, and a point that confused me a little bit, just because the guy they acquired, German, just had a fantastic season in the Dominican Winter League as well. Went over there and really had some excellent numbers. 22nd on MLB.com's top 30 for Red Sox pitchers or for Red Sox prospects. And what Chris Cotillo wrote for MassLive.com was that, you know, when they first announced that they were releasing him off the 40 man and that he was going to be DFA'd, that he was expecting like a big return. And it really doesn't scream that, you know, the return is that big. And you even talk about the Cade McClure thing. Like, if we are comparing the two, you know, trades, it does seem like Gregory Santos needed a little bit more. Even James Fox of Future Sox describing Denlinger on Twitter, it just seemed like a guy that, you know, he might be something, but he's further away from than German and German and Germans, I think, 1 year younger or about, you know, a couple months younger. So it really doesn't seem like the Red Sox got a steal here. And I think some White Sox fans might be a little bit tentative. The White Sox making a trade for a reliever because Jake Diekman is still in the White Sox bullpen. But yeah, I think the trade is a really good one. It's a guy that exactly what you guys said, like the depth needs to be turned over. And when you talk to Chris Getz, he brought up certain names in the organization that could be depth starters or starters, you know, 7, 8, 9. And I was talking to somebody and, you know, they were surprised that Jason Bilas wasn't brought up. And then who's the corresponding move with this for the DFA is Jason Bilas. Now, he might get through waivers because he faced a very tough assignment in Charlotte and struggled. But he was also the guy that Charlotte announced their new uniforms with. Jason Bilas was the model they used. So poor guy. It's a very good move. I think it's a solid move. Again, he might never pitch for the White Sox. Like, he might not make the team. He might struggle in AAA. Charlotte's a hell of a place to pitch if you are a player. But looking at who the White Sox have picked up and now have added to the 40-man or at least the organization, you got German, you got AJ Alexi, Gregory Santos, and Nick Avila. Avila is going to have the first shot to make the roster because of the Rule 5 situation. But if he stumbles in spring training, maybe they send him back to San Francisco for what? I think $100,000. So, you know, we'll see if that move happens. And then maybe, you know, Gregory Santos or Alexi or German impress. But it is toolsy guys that they are taking, and hopefully, you know, Ethan Katz can work his magic. I find it very interesting that the two things with AJ Alexi and German that stick out, they're the only two players with true Statcast info. I guess Santos has some Statcast info. But AJ Alexi and German, the big thing that sticks out to me is their fastballs are really low in the zone. They consistently weren't able to get it up. And they're guys with decent velocity and at least good spin. They have good vertical movement. And as Chris Johnson said, you know, we want the guys knowing in like what the actual rise of an average MLB fastball is. These guys have average to above average rise on their fastball. So throw it up in the zone. So it's guys that have tools that, you know, let's get him into the White Sox system and maybe he can fix them like Jimmy Lambert and Ronaldo Lopez saw success being fastball slider guys. Alexi and German are fastball slider guys. So it fits the profile of what the White Sox like in pitchers, or at least what Ethan Katz has been looking in toolsy pitchers.
Yeah, it's all a we'll see game right now, right? I mean, like there were so many guys, as we were talking last spring, this time a year ago, who were that pitching depth. And I don't think they were people that, you know, at the time, everybody was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is the pitching depth. Like, because you don't know what these guys are going to do. Like, nobody was like freaking out saying, oh, my God, get Sean Anderson Severino out of my sight before he pitched. Right. I mean, it took him pitching to you know, point out that he wasn't going to work at the major league level. So, You sometimes you got to throw these guys out there and see what they can give you. It's a tough job because the times have to line up, right? Because the opportunity is not necessarily going to come when you are at the top of your game, you know, throwing the best ball that you can possibly throw. So it's just a matter of seeing, you know, who gets that opportunity and what they can make out of it.
Also for the spring training roster invites, there's still Kenyon Middleton. There is Jesse Schultens. There is Nate Fisher. So we'll see if any of these guys are competition. A lot of depth, though, for the White Sox in spring training. And like you said, we'll see who's the cream of the crop. And hey, maybe it is just Nate Fisher because he's a lefty. You never know. I mean, that seemed why Bennett Souza was called up, was because he's a lefty. Herb, anything else to add on to this conversation before we hit the break? All right, well, let's go. We got to let you know about FOCO. Chicago, you've already got the best coverage for your favorite teams, so get fitted in the best sports gear around. FOCO has you covered from Soldier Field to the living room, north or south side. Sorry, Soldier Field to the front room, north or south side.
Thank you.
It seems like you're in a front room right now. North or south side, and with hoodies, slippers, signs, bobbleheads, and everything in between. Get decked out like DeMar with apparel from the leaders in sports merch and collectibles. FOCO, if you're looking for the perfect gift for the football fan in your life, FOCO's got you covered with hoodies to fight that Lake Michigan breeze. So check out FOCO.com or click the link in the description below. And for all non-presale items, just use the promo code CHGO for 10% off. Also got to let you know about Goose Island. They are supporting beer company. CHGO is supported by Goose Island Beer. They've been Chicago's beer since 1988. I was just in a Binnie's yesterday. Saw the Bourbon County Stout. Saw the new No Plans IPA that is very tasty, according to Herb. Saw the Blackhawks Pale Ale. Saw the Bulls City 312. Said hi to all the good friends. Didn't see the Green Line, but I did see the Matilda and Sophie. You know, I mean, it was loaded. I mean, there was goose everywhere at the Benny's.
I'm getting excited for. I like some of their seasonal stuff too. I'm getting excited to see what they got coming this summer because they have really they've hit some home runs with some summertime. I'm a big summer beer guy. You know what I mean? I like the little citrus in there. Give me a little wheat behind that. They come out with some real good stuff in the summer. So we'll see what they've got up their sleeve or up their feathers for this summer.
And hey, Herb seems to be joining those neon. It's the Beer Hug IPA series. They've just got the really nice neon design on the logo. Those seem summery. I mean, the nice little bear, neon vibes, you know. I mean, Herb, could you enjoy that in the summer?
All the time. Neon Bear Hug, that is one of the drinks they have. Neon Secret Bear Hug, another Bear Hug. But yeah, I could drink all those. I think the new one that you just talked about, the TTPA, the Tasty Time Pale Ale, man, what's it called?
No Plans.
Oh, I've had that the last two times we're in the studio. I'm going to have it later on today. Mercy.
There you go.
Now, that's a summertime drink. I think they make a nice Saison, too.
That they do. Yeah. That's the Sophie. That's good. The Sophie. I like that one. Yeah.
Shout out to the Sophie. I think the – what was the one you just brought up, Herb? The beer?
No Plans?
Oh, the No Plans. Yeah, it's like a 5.5 or something like that. It's got a cute little can as well, and it comes in the nice 15 caser. So go check out some Goose. And Goose's two locations are open and ready to welcome you. Grab a beer right from their innovative tanks at Goose Island's Tap Room at 1800 West Fulton, or get a smash burger and fresh beer of the week at the original Clybourne Brewhouse at 1800 North Clybourne. For reservations and pickup, go to gooseisland.com/locations, Goose Island Beer Company. All right, just before we get into the whole player preview, how was Top Notch? Was it thumbs up? Was it thumbs down?
It's thumbs up. And Sean, you saved the day because your recommendation was don't just get a burger, get a shake. And it was Friday when it was zero. But I went ahead and had the ice cream drink anyway, and it was stellar. I was a big fan of the shake. The burger was very good. I upgraded to the half pounder, which I feel was the right move. Top-notch beef burgers on 95th. Good stuff.
Fantastic. Nice booths. And I always just love the shakes too, because they give you the little silver, you know, shake that they make it in with it, you know.
Oh, you get the malt classic cup? I had a small, so I didn't get a little milk cup to go along with it. But the spoon was clutch. I'm usually not a spoon guy on a shake. I like using the straw and the straw only. But I don't know, maybe it was because it was like 0 degrees outside. But this one needed the spoon, and so I was glad I had the spoon.
Glad to hear it. Hey, love when the Southside can represent. All right, let's get into some Andrew Vaughn talk here. Player preview, Herb. I guess the big question for Andrew Vaughn in 2023, he is replacing Pito. He is replacing the guy that has been a mainstay here on the Southside. And I know it might be unfair to put all that pressure on him, but that's how fans see it. You know, he is taking over the spot that Jose Abreu has been holding down for a long time. And it seems like the White Sox made the choice to go Vaughn over Abreu. Maybe, you know, the Astros outpriced them because they overpaid for Jose Abreu. But still, what do you make of the assumption that Jose or Andrew Vaughn is, you know, now taking over for the man in town?
You know, that's what perception is, and perception is reality, especially with the fans of the White Sox. He will be judged of what Jose Abreu does this year in Houston, fairly or unfairly. You're taking over the spot. He's man, like you said, for the last 9 years. You're definitely going to be saying, people are like, okay, what's Houston doing? What's Abreu doing? Vaughn, oh, you're not doing as well? Man, we made a mistake, which is a mistake by the fans to do that, because he didn't do it. He didn't trade Jose Abreu. He didn't have Jose Abreu not re-sign with the White Sox. If you ask him, I'm sure he'd be like, I'll play outfield if that meant Jose Abreu was going to be here. Now the rest of the White Sox fans are like, pause. Come on, man. What are you doing out here? You're a terrible outfielder, and that's why you have a negative war over your first 2 years you played baseball. It's not because of the bat. You are, what, is your age 24 year? It's kind of similar to what Nathaniel Lowe went through from the Rangers, where they were 264, 357, 415. That was Lowe's numbers. And then last year, in his age 25 year, Lowe just took off. 302, 358, 492 for a slash. If Andrew Vaughn can go there, we're looking at something. We're looking at a player that was a 1 foot weighted runs created plus of 143. Andrew Vaughn last year was 113, around where Nathaniel Lowe was that same year at age 24. So if we could see that type of progression, don't think of him hitting 40 home runs. People think about going from 17, which was the team lead last year, to about 28. Just a little bit more power. And the thing with Andrew Vaughn is that he's way too selective in pitches in the zone. This is pretty much a White Sox thing in 2022, where they're letting balls go in 2-2-0, 3-1 counts. League average for balls in the heart of the zone is about 73% swing percentage. Andrew Vaughn was 65%. That's not good. And he doesn't, you know, I can usually like absolve that by saying, okay, he walks enough. No, he doesn't. Under 6% walk rate last year. That either has to go up or he has to get more aggressive, because his strikeout percentage is only in 17% and it's very low. So either get more aggressive in the zone or be more selective on balls that are not in the heart of the zone, because you're not powerful enough to just walk all the time, because you haven't shown the ability to walk at the major league level. But what you have shown is the hard hit percentage, 90th percentile in the major league. So if you swing at a couple more of those balls, 2-0, 3-1, in the heart of the zone, we'll be seeing better results from Andrew Vaughn. And I think, like you say, Sean, him getting out of the outfield will save his legs, and him playing his natural position, he'll feel a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more at home. We saw what happened with Yoan Moncada going from second base to third base. That first year, he took off. I expect similar things from Andrew Vaughn.
I mean, Herb, you know, you said perception is reality. Boy, I hope that's not the case. But the thing with Andrew Vaughn is no one should be judging him. No one should be calling him the replacement for Jose Abreu. I think that is extraordinarily unfair to do that, you know, just based on the fact that he could have been on this team with Jose Abreu. I mean, Jose Abreu is the best player on the White Sox. He's one of the best hitters in White Sox history. To expect somebody to come in and repeat that just because they played the same position is not fair. I understand that it has been quite the dynasty at first base on the south side of Chicago, first with Frank Thomas, Paul Konerko, and then Abreu. But, man, Andrew Vaughn's his own guy. They have a lot of faith in him, obviously, but you can't expect him to do what Abreu did.
Yeah, I mean, Jose Abreu was a professional for a very, very long time before he even made it to the White Sox. You know, Andrew Vaughn had a very, very short minor league career, and he wasn't even supposed to be in the outfield. Again, like Eloy Jimenez hanging from left field caused him to be an outfielder and be put in that situation. He's wearing 25 because Jim Thome was giving him all that that knowledge about how to be a DH in spring training, and then that got turned on its head. I think with the whole replacing Abreu thing, he's not the best hitter on the White Sox. And you take away Jose Abreu, I don't think the guy that replacing him needs to be that. I think, you know, the losing Jose Abreu, it's basically you're hoping that Andrew Benintendi and Andrew Vaughn can now combine to create something that is like Jose Abreu or possibly even better, because two could be better than one. I think this is now focusing on Luis Robert or Eloy Jimenez or Tim Anderson. I don't want to say Tim can't be the best player on the team, because he definitely can prove me wrong. But I think,
well, and Sean,
has to be
Sean,
Jimenez or Robert, right?
And what I would say is keep going. You know what I mean? Like, this has to be an entire team. No, I'm serious. This has to be an entire team-wide thing, because they went out and got Andrew Benintendi, who is a good pickup for this team and is what he does a lot of things that the White Sox needed to improve in. But he can't be expected to replace Jose Abreu. So all of that production that Abreu had has to come not just from Benintendi. It has to come from everybody, not only, you know, as we've mentioned before, right, meeting their own expectations, but then eclipsing them a little bit so you can make up for the fact that your best player is now playing for the Houston Astros. It's not going to be easy, and certainly the focus will be on Vaughn because they play the same position, but that is not fair to that guy, because this is something that has to happen up and down the lineup. I mean, The White Sox failings offensively last year meant that Yasmani Grandal has to go from where he was in 22 to, and has to make up a lot to get back to where he was at the end of 21, right? And then he has to do a little bit more, because the White Sox, A, need to be good enough to win the World Series, and then B, they need to replace Jose Abreu. You know what I mean? Luis Robert has to do what he was supposed to do, which everybody thought he was going to be an MVP caliber player last year, and then he's got to do a little bit more. Eloy Jimenez had a great second half. You maybe can keep him out of this conversation, but he's got to do a little bit more, because he's the biggest bat in the middle of this lineup. Tim Anderson had a real bad year last year. Yoan Moncada had a real bad year last year. Those guys need to get back to their point before we can talk about then replacing Jose Abreu as a collective unit. So Andrew Vaughn, is a guy who the White Sox have a ton of confidence in. I mean, this is someone who you can tell they, I mean, obviously when they drafted him, they drafted a first baseman. They knew he was going to play first base someday, but you can tell that they had their eye on him being the next in this line of first baseman for a while, because, and they say, okay, go ahead. You didn't play very much minor league baseball, but go ahead and get out there. We got confidence in you. You know what I mean? We're going to give you an everyday job. Eloy Jimenez goes down in spring training, like you mentioned. Okay, let's have Andrew Vaughn do it, because we're confident that he can hit and that playing a position that he's never played before is not going to impact his bat too negatively. I think people have seen a lot of positive things from Andrew Vaughn offensively through his first 2 years in the majors. And I don't think anybody's worried about necessarily what he's going to do with the bat. It's getting to that potential quickly enough to, you know, just like everybody else on this roster, like I just mentioned, to make a run at a championship sooner rather than later. I don't think anybody's worried about long-term what Andrew Vaughn is going to be. It's, can he get to there quickly enough to be that bat in the middle of the order? I mean, is this guy going to bat probably fifth this year, right? In the White Sox lineup, maybe even cleanup. I mean, depends on how you want to lay him out there. I think probably everybody can go TA and then Benintendi at the top. But if you want to put Robert in an RBI spot, or you want to just put him third, because that makes most sense, then Aloy and then Vaughn. I mean, is that the way you do it? That's a pretty, putting a lot of stuff on Andrew Vaughn's shoulders in terms of putting him as one of the guys in the middle of the lineup, and we'll see if he can do it. Hey, he led the team in home runs, or like you mentioned last year. You know, we can talk all we want about Jose Abreu being their best hitter. Jose Abreu didn't hit as many home runs as Andrew Vaughn did.
And the thing is with Andrew Vaughn, he doesn't hit enough home runs, and he is the home run hitter of the White Sox, or he doesn't get on base enough via the walk for me to put him in the 3-4 or five position. So I'm going either Luis, then Aloy, then Yoan Moncada. If we're doing the top of TA and Andrew Benintendi, then we're going with Vaughn because of the lack of power and the lack of getting on base, unless he shows different this year.
Yeah, I mean, I hear your point about the walks, and I agree with you that I think 1-5 is probably TA, Benintendi, Robert, Aloy, and then Vaughn. I think that would probably be the 1-5. I don't know. I think it's probably versus lefties and righties too. I mean, maybe Grandal gets a shot being the cleanup hitter against, what would that be, right-handers? Maybe they feel confident in that, but I think Moncada has sealed himself to six or below until he starts proving that, hey, I can walk again, or hey, I can drive the ball. I would think that Moncada is probably going to be lower in the lineup.
But I would break up all that right-handedness there in the middle.
I think Grandal's the wild card there. I think Grandal, because it depends on his production, I think, a little bit, right? I mean, if he gets off to a similarly slow start, whether it's because of the health or whatever, you know, he's probably going to be reserved to lower down. But if he's hitting like Yasmani Grandal can hit, I think they'd put him anywhere in that lineup. I think they have the confidence to put him in absolutely any spot. And so if he's hitting well in the spring, he could be anywhere. And maybe, Herb, it's because of the reason you're saying, you know, maybe they go Robert 3, Grandal 4, Aloy 5 on a fairly regular basis if Grandal is doing his Yasmani Grandal thing.
Yeah, I the real thing that's interesting about the walk rate, Herb, is just that, I mean, this is a player in college that had a 500 OBP. Like, he showed a walk tool, and he's shown a discipline at the plate. And what I have been really excited about over the past 2 years is his ability to get the bat on the ball. I mean, you heard us talking about this past week, Oscar Colas, and his ability to put the bat on the ball, and how his zone contact's about an 80%. Andrew Vaughn's is at a 90%. Like, if you look at the past 2 years, players who have a 90% contact zone only, or a zone contact rate only, and Vaughn's at 89.9, so I'm going to be a little bit liberal here and round up. But I think there's about 28 guys with a zone contact rate of 89.9 or above. And there's only a few who have that zone contact rate and hard hit ability. And there's some wacky names on there, right? There's Kyle Farmer, now of the Minnesota Twins. And there's also Randall Grichuk. But there's also Mookie, J-Ram, Bregman, France, Arenado, Yandy Diaz, who just got an extension with the Rays, Yordan Alvarez, Marcus Semien, and Andrew Vaughn. So, like, he's in great company with certain spots. And I think the big thing that Chris Johnson has said this past offseason that has stuck out to me was sticking on the fastball. And this team needs to stick on the fastball and their ability to identify fastballs. I think if Andrew Vaughn is able to have a hitting coach that is able to break him down and be like, all right, you are looking fastball every single time. And you talked about their seceded runs in 2-0 and 3-0 counts. I think the biggest thing for Vaughn, and especially in 2022, was probably his just questioning himself of, can I actually hit this this slider, or will this be a slider? Am I correctly judging that this is going to be a slider, or will this fastball that's going directly down the middle, you know, take a weird turn and go to the outside, the outside batter's box? Like, I don't know if Vaughn had that ability. And I talked about his lack of a hitting coach. Like, if there's division in this locker room and we're thinking about how these guys are all splitting up, like, who is Andrew Vaughn's hitting leader? It seemed to be AJ Pollock, who clearly didn't want to be there, and he wasn't there in 2021, or Frank Minichino. And Frank Minichino, in my opinion, did a bad job with this White Sox team over the past 2 years. That's why he got replaced. So I think that Chris Johnson is going to be a very important person, especially now being able to give Andrew Vaughn true metrics. This is what a pitch is going to do. This is how it's going to act. This is how it's going to behave. You know, if it's at your chest and it's a guy that has above average rise, then you're probably going to want to lay off of it because it's going to stick above the zone. I think Andrew Vaughn is an incredibly smart hitter. He was talking about spin rates and understanding spin rates and how balls are spinning as a college hitter. And I still think he understands that. And I don't think he's going to be able to just fall off the map completely. I think having a new hitting coach is going to be huge for Andrew Vaughn. And the one thing that's interesting is just, like, you talked about selling out for power, like Nathaniel Lowe. This is from Scott Hsu of pitcherlist.com, and he shared this, and they're rolling out a new hitter tool. And this is Andrew Vaughn's rolling power over every 75 batted ball event. And a batted ball event is basically a fair ball. And as you can see, the expected extra bases added skyrockets near the latter half of the season. And I think that's mainly because Vaughn was selling out. It wasn't about walking or striking out. He was trying to hit for power. And you could see that right here in the later half of the year, his percentile is above 75%, which was above his season average. And you look at his ability to hit fastballs in the later half of last year, it was a pretty rough month for him overall in September, October in 2022. He had a zero run value. But when you're looking at strictly high fastballs and fastball in the zone, it was one of his best months when he was just selling out for strictly fastball and power. So I'm just trying to think of, what can this guy be if he's honed in on the fastball? If he's able to produce such high hard hit velocities to, you know, an upper echelon level that we've seen from MLB Network and their Statcast stat, which I think he has, like, you know, the sixth best hard hit percentage or whatever. Like, I just truly think that if he has the right direction, it could be a skyrocket for him, because he'll be able to really dominate the plate and just be able to not let pitchers push him aside. So I'm just excited that I think he's got the right voice in his mind, or the right voice in his head. I do think that the coaching staff is a positive addition for a lot of the hitters, and Vaughn specifically.
I think, like you said, you could sacrifice some of that hard hit percentage, 90th percentile in the league, and just go for the downs every once in a while. And, you know, sometimes you'll get a slider that will have you out in front, and you'll be dribbling this ball to third base. Who cares? But if it's in the heart of the heart, let's start swinging a little bit more, because 63% when league average, or 65% when league average, 73 for such a young hitter, there's so much growth that can be there, as you were saying, with the new assistant hitting coach, Chris Johnson there. Maybe he's telling them, these are opportunities for you to just be feasting on. You should be at 85% if the league's at 74, because you're just that good. You're hard hit. When you put bat to ball, the ball is going hard and it's getting hit in places where the defense doesn't want him to. So sacrifice a little bit of your 17.6% strikeout rate for extra home runs. That'll get you paid more. I mean, I don't know if he's motivated by payment or by numbers, by accolades, whatever gets to him, got to get to him that way and say, you are a champion of a hitter, but you're also way too selective of a hitter for the non-walking, not a lot of power guy that you are currently.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Cut you off real quick. And like in the heart of the plate, when you're talking about that, in that same month where he was, you know, mostly on the fastball, in the heart of the plate, he was minus two run value when pitches were in the heart of the plate. So like he was better at fastballs up in the zone, which I feel like is a little bit better. Cause I think that in July and August, he was really getting beat up by and missing, swinging and missing at fastballs high in the zone. So at least he made that adjustment in September and October. Sorry, Vinny.
No, I was just going to say, listen, I think you guys are talking about just seeing a general overall improvement from a guy who the White Sox have the confidence can be the guy in the middle of a lineup. I mean, there's a reason they spent a number three draft pick on him. There's a reason that they've been so high on him ever since he joined the organization. They envision that type of hitter. They envision a guy who can carry a lineup. The thing that is going to be very interesting to me is let's see some stamina. Let's see what that looks like from Andrew Vaughn, because we heard all about him running out of gas at the end of his rookie season. You know, he said, hey, I never played a full season before. There was some, you know, there's some talk of what might have been bothering him physically, you know, from a health standpoint. But his main excuse, or his main explanation, I should say, was, listen, I've never played this many games in a season before. This is a first, and I didn't know how to budget my energy. You know, you look at last year, and he was among those guys early in the season who Tony La Russa was talking about, hey, these guys have physical things going on and they can't run at 100%, or they're going to risk injuring themselves even further. We saw him go on the IL with after he got hit by a pitch at one point. But again, toward the end of the year, and even since the offseason has started, it's been getting him out of the outfield, making sure that he's not running around, you know, every day could benefit him. And playing first base could benefit him in not only in terms of what might happen at the plate. You can talk about focus and stuff like that. But I just think physically, making sure that he's not fatigued or he's not, you know, unhealthy in any way. This is a guy who definitely is going to do anything that's asked of him and go all out at any time that he can. It's just a matter of whether his body is going to let him or not. And I know we've talked about that with a lot of White Sox players, particularly someone like Yoan Moncada or even Yasmani Grandal, who's a little certainly further along in his career than those two guys. But I think the sky's the limit for Vaughn. Certainly the White Sox think that. The thing that I'm going to be focusing on is, all right, we've seen two full seasons from you, and it has not been consistent from a what is your body going to allow you to do standpoint. So maybe playing first base changes that. Of course, there's the defensive question that comes into this too. I think you can expect somebody to play certainly fine defense at first base, but you can't get around the fact that he's not as tall as Jose Abreu. And there were plenty of throws going over Jose's head the last few years, be it, you know, from the shortstop or the third base position on the left side of the infield. So we're going to see how that impacts the White Sox on a regular basis. But I think the main thing for me as I look ahead to Andrew Vaughn in 2023 is can he put together a start to finish consistent season in terms of there's not a day where his body is an excuse. You know what I mean? I'm obviously that's unrealistic for any baseball player, but let's see him try to go from wire to wire and be consistent, not necessarily production standpoint, because listen, it's baseball, everything ebbs and flows, but just from a, all right, can you post every day? And when you do, can you have the ability to be that offensive player that everybody assumes that you can be?
Yeah, and we're going to take a quick break, and I think we'll get into maybe, you know, what a full healthy season might look like.
Got to let you know about the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. First, though, they're committed to helping families and businesses in the communities we serve save money and energy, and ComEd offers free facility assessments that can help find energy-saving opportunities, whether it's lighting, HVAC system, commercial kitchen equipment, or industrial processes. An authorized engineer will work with you to develop a detailed assessment plan specific to your goals and needs, and these can be done in person or virtually and last approximately 2 hours. Within 3 to 4 weeks, customers will receive a report detailing energy efficiency projects that they could start working on immediately. So don't wait. Get started saving money and energy today. For energy saving tips and to schedule your free facility assessment, go to ComEd.com/poweringbiz. That's ComEd.com/poweringbiz. And if you're ready to sign up for a facility assessment, go to or call us at 1-855-433-2700 during normal business hours to speak with a ComEd Energy Efficiency Program representative. Thank you to ComEd for your support. Also got to let you know about our friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. The stage is set and we're counting down to the battle in Arizona. There's no better way to get ready for the NFL action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 57. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and existing customers can take a shot at even bigger payouts with DraftKings stepped-up same-game parlays. Boost your Super Bowl 57 winnings with each leg up to 100%. I just hit big on Paolo Banchero to hit a double-double in the Magic and Hornets game. Looking forward to next Sunday for the big game between the Eagles and the Chiefs. I like the Chiefs on the money line. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code CHGO. New customers can bet $5 on Super Bowl 57 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code CHGO. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Void in Ohio.
So what would a healthy season look like for Vaughn? Obviously, him moving to first base should be a huge help. That's what he played for in college. I think he played 160 college games. 159 of them were at first base. One was at pitcher. This is a first baseman, and I think the height question's a fair one. Herb, before we get into what the offense might look like, do you care too much about what the defense will look like?
I do. I do. And as Vinny was saying, he's the departure is almost like 5-6 inches shorter than what Jose Abreu is. I know he's listed as taller than that, but 5'10", and the bases are getting bigger, so it's going to be a little bit more of an advantage where he doesn't have to be as 6'3", 6'4" as Jose Abreu, because the base is going to be allow him to move around the bag. But you said he's had experience in college in the minors with first base bag. He's more comfortable there. I think a player being more comfortable anywhere on the field makes sense for that player to produce on the other side of the field. We've talked about Eloy Jimenez ad nauseum, as he doesn't want to be a designated hitter. And then we put him at designated hitter, the actual numbers were pretty good and pretty similar. So it's like, okay, even though he doesn't want to do this, he's not taking it out there when he's up that bat. And I think that's also kind of important for Andrew Vaughn. He's kind of timid, doesn't know what he's doing in right and left field because he hasn't played there a lot, and he's making a lot of errors. And he's probably, like you said, he knows spin rate. He knows all these other analytical terms. I'm sure he knows his defensive score. I'm sure he knows his outs above average, and it's getting to him when he's out there in left and right field. This year, don't worry about that. And so this year he can do more of a offensive offseason, not having to worry about getting his legs straight for extra running that the outfield brings to him, which also brings out those soft tissue injuries. So I think, like you were saying, and like you've been pounding the table for, getting him off his feet more in the outfield, bringing him to first base, will instantly improve his offense. And I think his defense was negligible. I don't know how bad of an infielder was, but they wouldn't be putting him there if they didn't believe that he can at least be adequate at the position. I don't expect him to be a astoundingly great first baseman, but his arm is above average too. So I expect the 3-6-3 double play still be into effect, as Jose Abreu still did.
Hopefully he could just throw it over the base runner with the height issue. But yeah, I think that hopefully, like, he's got negative metrics when it comes to first base, but I don't think he ever got consistency there. I mean, when was Jose Abreu ever giving him 2 days to play first base in a row? I think consistency will be important for him. What will he be like May from October? Because April might be rough for Andrew Vaughn in a cold month playing first base. But, you know, I hopefully it's a position that he could settle into. Just talking about offensively, though, this is again from Scott Schuhen, pitcher list. But you talk about the rolling contact ability, Herb, and kind of trading away contact for some power. He did that in the later half of 2022. So I think that's also a good sign. He's still above the MLB average, as you could see there, for contact frequency above expected. His rolling contact ability was still above MLB average when he started, you know, going for a power a little bit more, making less contact. And then also with that, too, his strike zone judgment got worse. But not as bad as the MLB not as good as the MLB average. So, you know, hopefully, again, like he can focus in on a pitch and that could help him. The thing that just is promising again, though, is like he still has good power. He has power to all fields. And maybe if he's able to start pulling the ball a little bit more, that's where that home run power will come from, because he's still been able to drive doubles off the wall. He's still been able to get some opposite field home runs out of him. I do wonder if Vaughn does make a little bit more of a change and starts pulling the ball a little bit more, if, you know, we would see 28 home runs or something like that. I mean, if I had to set the home run number at 19.5, would you take the over or under for Andrew Vaughn in 2022?
Over. I think I'm going 25 plus for Andrew Vaughn this year.
Yeah, I'd say over as well. I think when you look at him again, and I brought this up kind of, I'll say it in a different way. I've talked about the White Sox confidence in him. Now I think I probably should talk about people's, you know, observers and fans' confidence in him. it's a guy who I don't really think offense is going to be that big of a problem for him. I mean, we saw team-wide offensive issues last year for the White Sox, and I think that is probably more significant to this discussion than necessarily what Andrew Vaughn was facing on an individual level. What I will say is this. We talk about the position switch, getting him off his feet, what effect that might have physically. Let's talk about the mental aspect of it too, right? I mean, as of reporting to camp in each of the last 2 years, I don't think Andrew Vaughn thought he was going to play outfield. Certainly he didn't in 2021. And last year, yeah, there was a possibility for it, but you know, they go out and they get AJ Pollock and it looks like Andrew Vaughn's going to be DHing most of the time. And then of course, another injury to Eloy Jimenez throws that all out of whack. He's going to go into this year knowing he's doing something he's done before, knowing he's doing something he's comfortable doing. The mental approach that he has and the attitude that he has is what everybody wants, I think. And that's, sure, I'll do it. Sign me up. I'm ready to go. Let's go ahead. But imagine if you didn't have to do that, right? Imagine if there was not a, 40-minute or an hour period every single day, not only while you're trying to hit a major league pitch, but that you have to think about practicing a new position, that you have to go take fly balls. Now he's going to be doing something that he's done a million times before. And hitting is going to not necessarily even be more of a focus, because I think it's always a focus with a guy like him. I just think it's less unexpected. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen in the bottom of the inning, what's going to happen 2 days from now when I have to go, when the skip told me I got to go play right field. This could be a situation that's beneficial from a mental standpoint as much as it is a physical standpoint. And of course, we've heard even Rick Hahn say that he thinks he was speaking generally, people, back to their natural positions can help them offensively. Certainly, you would imagine he's talking about Andrew Vaughn in that instance. It's not just the physical thing that could benefit him. It's the mental thing, too.
Well, and two on that, just with walk rate, I think you brought that up earlier, Herb, right? Vaughn, in his first 105 games, had a walk rate of 8.9, and that's when the White Sox were walking a ton in Tony La Russa's first year, too. So I wonder what, the mental and the environment could help him do. I wonder if he's got a clean bill of health. He knows what he's doing at first base. This team's on a more straight direction with their hitting. It seems like they're emphasizing getting on base more. So maybe if that's the environment that he's in, he's in a good mental health space and he's got the physical stuff around him. It could be a big year for Andrew Vaughn. Hey, we also know that things could go wrong with an instant for the White Sox and someone could get injured. And hey, maybe he's in the outfield again. I do have a final question for you guys. A little trivia. Hopefully you weren't on Twitter to see the answer. Since over the past 2 years, so combining 2021 and 2022, from April, May, June, and July, which player has the lowest swing and miss rate for the White Sox?
I bet it's Andrew Vaughn.
Okay, that's a good guess. It's incorrect.
Wait, I didn't really even think about that.
I'm going to say he didn't play a lot, but Yasmani Grandal.
Grandal did play enough. 5.2% was not the lowest on the team.
High contact last 2 years, the first 4 months of the season. Let's go ahead and say it was Tim Anderson.
Nope. Tim Anderson, 10.6 swing and miss rate. It's Gavin Sheets. And I just bring it up just because, you talk about people returning to their natural positions. I don't know if we're going to see Gavin Sheets get more time at DH this year. I'm not sure if we're going to see him get more time at first base this year. But he might still be an option if Colas doesn't work out. I was looking for an Andrew Vaughn stat, and that's why I'm assuming Vinny said Andrew Vaughn. Vaughn was at 6% for swing and miss rate. So a little bit better than Tim Anderson, worse than Yasmani Grandal and Gavin Sheets. But even Gavin there too, I think Gavin could allow himself to, swing and miss a little bit more and trade off some power. So it is interesting seeing the White Sox be a little bit more timid, but it not show up as walk rate. So maybe there is something there for the White Sox. Maybe they're able to turn that patience into power. And hopefully they could have a good 2023 year. It's not all on Andrew Vaughn's shoulders, as we just said, but he's a part of it. He's a part of the team and a part of the nine men that will be out there on opening day. That is Vinny Duber. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. We'll be with you on Monday at 4 p.m. for another CHGO Live White Sox podcast on the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We're going to get out of here on a voice break. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Go Sox.